Trees can't speak, but John Eisenhower speaks their language. Talking Trees with Rosie on the House.
We had a lot of good guesses. It was not Fort Huachuca down in Sierra Vista that was the first territorial capital of Arizona. It was not Fort Lowell. I knew of Lowell Observatory in Flagstaff. I'm not sure I knew of a Fort Lowell, but I'm guessing it's around Flagstaff. Not Fort Grant. It was Fort Whipple, near just north of what today is Chino Valley. So everyone that texted in Fort Whipple, we're going to put your names in a hat. And if we're going to check and make sure you weren't a Rosie on the House ticket winner in the last 12 months. And once we've got that reduced down to our final qualified contestants, we'll pick at random and send you the tickets to Arizona ASU versus Princeton. And then next hour, about the 9:20 break, we'll give, I think they're Suns tickets.
Yep. Some Suns tickets.
Suns tickets, yes.
I was going to say that even if you were not a winner of those tickets to the ASU game, you need to go this year because they're playing some really good b-ball.
Good.
Yeah. Sun Devils are doing really well. I'm an ASU alum, as you know. And it's really nice when your alma mater is playing some good sports in any sport. But it's really nice this year. They have got a really good team. And it's good to go out and support our local boys. That's all.
Very good.
20th ranked Sun Devils.
Yes, there you go. Mm-hmm.
Talking Trees here at Rosie on the House with John Eisenhower, ISA certified arborist. You can join the conversation at 1-888-767-4348. You can text questions to 411-923, just like Phil did. Bought a new home in Scottsdale, has very large mesquite trees. He says the bark is extremely rough compared to other mesquites he has seen, and wanted to know if this is normal or if it's something that he needs to be concerned about.
Well, it's two things. It could be a different species. Our native Arizona or Prosopis velutina, our
very
desert,
shaggy.
Our velvet mesquite. No, they tend to be pretty smooth in the early going. As the wood gets older in the lower trunk, it'll start to get more shaggy. It'll start to get older and develop some what's called suberin. It's more of a corky outer cambium. And that's just due to age. But the species is different, too, because with the younger wood is smoother, the older wood is more rough. But between species, the Chileans tend to have that very, very coarse, dark, furrowed bark. But the native mesquites are a little lighter colored, and they tend to be a little smoother skinned, a little bit longer. All of them, as they get older, anything beyond about 10 or 12 years, that wood will develop a lot of suber, and it's a protective outer corky protective covering for the tree. So it's to be expected, and it's not unusual when that happens. But it depends on the age and the species.
So there's really nothing for him to worry about. If you would take a walk out into Fort McDowell, would probably be the closest place to Scottsdale I could think of. You're going to see a lot of those mesquites that are aged.
The older ones, yeah.
The bark's going to look just like what you're looking at.
Perfectly normal, yep.
Let's see how we can help Aaron real quick before we get back to our talking tree to-dos here at Rosie on the House. Aaron, welcome to the program. How may we help you?
Thank you guys for taking my call. I've got a bougainvillea on the side of my house, and it's in my way. And I'd hate to just take it out and throw it away. Is it possible for me to take it out and put it elsewhere?
Yeah, it just depends on the age and size. If how big is the trunk, at the ground?
I mean, the trunk's got to be about, I'd say, 16-inch round.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. You know, they are they can be transplanted. They are one of those shrubs that are pretty durable, and you can, high likelihood that you'll be able to transplant it successfully, but you'll have to get quite as much of the soil around the tree as you can. And the wider, of course, you make that root ball, You know, if you put your shovel into the ground and start to dig down around it, to dig it out, to move it, you want to take probably a foot of soil on each side of that 16-inch stump. And that represents a lot of weight. You'll be surprised that if you dig around it that far around, you may not be able to lift it out of the hole very easily. It might take three or four people to get underneath it and lift it and get below it, which is a trick too. You know, getting a strap or something all the way underneath that root ball and lifting it so you can actually, once you have a couple of straps underneath it, then it's a lot easier to pull it out of the ground. You know, with three or four people. But it could be, you know, 300 or 400 pounds of soil on a tree that size. You know, you could go with a smaller root ball, of course, but then you're risking removing so much root material that it doesn't survive the transplant. So, you know, without seeing it, it's kind of hard to know. Also, the best time for doing that would be next spring. I would suggest sometime right around the middle to the end of February at the earliest, and then. You know, take it then, and the soil temperatures will begin to warm up, and the root activity, which is critical to the survival, will be more likely in those warmer soil temperatures.
And 2 years from now, after you've tried to kill it and transplant it multiple times, and you're just completely fed up with it because they are extremely hardy, and there was a point where I used to take really good care of the bougainvilleas, and I spent so much time trimming them, and they were perfect color pulling up to the house, and they're on the side of the garage. I finally just got to the habit. I would just go whack them off at the base, pull all those shrubs out, because the darn thing was going to be fully regrown and back in a couple months anyway. And
yeah.
All this time I spent trimming it to perfection, it lasted like 6 weeks. I don't have time for this. So I just got in the habit of whacking it off.
Well, our listener,
and letting it come back.
To that point, our listener might even be advised, if he doesn't realize you can do that, maybe you could just cut it back severely to give you the clearance that you need. And maybe you'll be surprised that it responds well and it survives that very, very heavy radical pruning. And maybe you can keep it within bounds and live with it and enjoy it in that location. So yeah, give that. We've always told people give that a try, and if you're going to take it out otherwise, you know, maybe you can cut it back and find that you can live with it at a smaller size, and it will survive that type of heavy pruning before you go to the next step of having to take it out altogether.
Continuing on with our talking points for today, we've got frost coming up. Hopefully we get a good frost. Just for the insect kill off, I'm hoping for a good freeze.
Yeah,
this
people are saying, no, I don't want the frost to kill my plants, and the other people are saying, yeah, bring it on. You know, it's hard. Yeah, we do need that hard winter freeze to kill some of the insect pests that otherwise overwinter, and then you have a heavy infestation the next year of whitefly or aphids or what have you. So yeah, the temperature extremes are helpful in Arizona. That's why we have such low insect populations here, is because most of them can't handle either our hot summers or our very cold winters. So those temperature extremes are actually beneficial. But when it comes to frost protection of your trees and shrubs, it is good to be ready. Sometimes if those cold temperatures drop quickly, a lot of the home improvement centers and hardware stores and are have a run on frost cloth. So you might want to, in anticipation of that, get out and purchase your frost cloth now. Be ready for those nights that are going to drop down below freezing. To that point, too, on the freezing, it takes not just a dip in temperatures to cause frost damage to plants. It takes more than that. It takes sometimes at least several hours at that low temperature. If it just spikes down for an hour or so on a given night, you're not going to have very much damage. But once it persists, you know, at that temperature for several hours overnight, you'll start to have some damage to you, especially to your broad-leaved plants. So protect them, keep them, covered. Avoid the use of plastic materials. They tend not to be very effective. They can actually cause, some problems. Use an actual frost cloth material or even a bed sheet. I saw, you know, people have used styrofoam cups to put over their cactus too, just to protect the tips from getting too cold. And I saw a clever, someone had covered all the tops of their little cactus with a little Santa hats, you know. That was pretty cool. But
oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's very, very
frost
seasonal,
protection.
Green and red, and got the frost protection, but got their holiday decoration at the same time. In fact, I think I'll post something to our Facebook page. You might want to check. In fact, we might have already posted it. You might want to check our Integrity Tree Service Facebook page for that photo. I thought it was pretty cool. Regarding frost protection, too, be sure that whatever frost cloth you apply over your shrubs, be sure that you drape it all the way down to the ground level and then secure it there. Because it doesn't help to just drape it over the top, because the air can get below it and defeat the whole purpose. So be sure that you cut your frost cloth large enough so that you'll have plenty of extra material to get down onto the soil surface, and then you can place something like a brick or some rocks on top of that. I'm speaking of with your shrubs mainly, but the same is true of your over your small trees. You need to have that frost cloth come all the way down to the ground and have enough left over that you can lay it out onto the soil surface and put something heavy on top of it to keep a complete dome of protected space below the frost cloth. That allows the humidity, you know, underneath there to modify the temperature and keep it warmer. You can also put lights inside there. We've had some of our customers put floodlights inside the dome first, and drape them up inside the tree. Even Christmas lights can help, although you need the incandescent type, not the LEDs, which don't produce heat. You need some of the light bulbs that actually have a heat output to give you any benefit there. And of course, watering is important too. If you have if you're anticipating that we're going to be getting some freezing temperatures, a nice deep soaking around your trees is helpful, because it increases the humidity and therefore the effectiveness of your frost cloth system that you're going to install.
Let's bring Raymond into the conversation. And as we do, one note, if you're not prepared for the frost or have frost cloth, when a frost comes, you won't find it anywhere. The stores get cleared out like that.
They do. I know.
So get prepared now. Hope we got a frost. And if it doesn't come this year, you're prepared for next year when we do get that next hard freeze. Raymond, how can we help you, sir?
Well, I have maybe a couple of questions for you. I planted a nectarine tree and a peach tree, but my nectarine tree seems like it never grows or produces like really fruit on it. And I don't understand what I'm doing wrong. I mean, maybe I'm not feeding it like regular, you know, tree food or fruit food, whatever you guys get. It just seems like I'm not getting what I planted. And my peach tree seems like it grows a lot of peaches, but they're really small.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Well, I planted a nectarine tree myself, and it had a it was a very slow grower. It didn't grow as fast as the peach tree, and it only produced a few pieces of fruit, as opposed to the peach, which has been prolific over many, many years. In fact, it eventually the nectarine had to be taken out, but it could be, too, that you have a nectarine variety that has a higher chill hour requirement. And, you know, you have to have a specific number of chill hours for every fruit tree. And if we don't achieve those, that is, we don't have a sufficient number of hours under 40 degrees, the tree simply won't be able to produce the fruit that you desire. So I do have a couple of those trees, and we've kept them despite that fact, but it's disappointing, because I only get the fruit about every 5 or 6 years when we have enough fruit hours or chill hours to be able to produce the fruit. So you might need to just wait and keep your fingers crossed for those chill hours.
And I'll tell you, on the peach tree, from personal experience, is the hardest thing to do. You have to thin peaches.
Yeah, you do.
If you want them to grow in mature size. And it's the hardest thing to do, because it's such a beautiful pink bloom. The last thing you want to do is mess with it. But once those blooms start dropping, I mean, one in every four go out there and chop. My neighbor actually does his pruning by just going out and hacking half of his tree off. Mm. And it doesn't look the best, but his peaches went from, you know, the size of grapes to the size of oranges.
Well, you run two risks. One is that you'll have smaller fruit if you leave all of it on, but also you run the risk of branches breaking. So yeah, thin out your peaches, and they'll usually be larger, and you'll have
less risk. And it needs to be at least 6 or 7 years old.
Less risk of branches breaking too.
Yeah.